This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
Do you know that I went to camp in Michigan? I did. Four summers in a row. You did. Joe did not know. And maybe some in the audience did not know either that for four summers in a row, I went to camp in Michigan doing theater, making music, and living out some of my most awkward teenage angst moments. So I have a very soft space in my heart for all things and people related to, from, and currently living in Michigan. My guest is laughing. So it is an honor and treat to have today's guest, a current Michigan resident, the global events, the head of global events and partnerships. That is you, head of global events and partnerships at Ryan. It's my pleasure to introduce today's guest on Speaking of Events is Joe McEwen. Welcome, Joe, Michigan resident. How it goes?
Yeah, good. Good to be with you, Carrie. Thanks for that nice introduction. We're proud of the state of Michigan. I haven't lived here my whole career, but it's great to be back in the state where I grew up.
Yes. And do you do the hand thing that I see so many Michiganers, do, right? You hold up your left hand, is that correct? And then you show
that is
on
correct.
Your hand. Yes. And show the people who are watching it. Oh, there you go. Right there. Yes.
Yep, in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Right. And so if you're just listening, it's sort of on the, I don't know, that fleshy part next-ish to your thumb is where Ann Arbor is. Thank you so much, Joe, and the state of Michigan. To everyone in the state of Michigan, thank you. What my first question, as always, is Joe McEwen, Michigan resident. What is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
So the one thing is the impact that events have on the audience and understanding why we do events, not just how to do them, but why we do them and what they deliver to the firm, the corporation, the association, or whatever the sponsor of the event is. That's the one thing. I wish we knew the impact better of why we're doing the event rather than just how we did the event.
Ooh, so how do you get there? If as you're creating something or an idea sparks, is it... What comes first? Is it the why? Is it the date? Is it the product? Or I mean, what comes first typically for you?
So I submit it should be the why, not the when. And I think a lot of cases people say we're going to do it this way. And I insist that the seven most dangerous words in the event business are we did it that way last year. And I'm on the corporate event side, right? So on the corporate side, we have measurements that we have to compete with the direct mail person. We have to compete with the person who's responsible for the digital ads in getting those marketing dollars to invest in the event business. And I think if we don't start with the why, we're going to end up with the food was good and the audience loved it. And that's not really how you measure modern event marketing, I don't think.
Right. So in 2020, and people said, we did it last year. We did it this way last year. That didn't really float.
No, the great pivot, right? And I think we've learned a whole lot since the pandemic. And I think we're going to have to continue that learning as we look for a post-pandemic endemic world in the event space. We did have to change our tactic, right? The old tactic, let's put the customers or the prospects in a room, let's show them a great thing and let's see if they buy more. Let's put the employees in a room, let's tell them what a great company they work for, how proud of them we are. We couldn't do that anymore. So we still had to commit to the results that were coming out of the event program. And we still had to communicate our messages out. So we pivoted. And, you know, I had an event, as an example, that was a couple thousand person customer conference that we were planning to run. And of course, we had to change that. But we still had that messaging that we had to get out. So we pivoted to an online broadcast. And, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it was the start. And I think we learned a lot from it. And it kind of evolved into where my head is today with all of our bigger events. And that is we need to stay kind of in that hybrid model because there are people that are going to want to learn looking at their computer or listening to the event. then there are people that are going to want to go to the event and they're going to want to be part of that experience. So I think we as the event professionals of the future have to think about how we do both and how we consider what the right delivery mechanism is for the content we're trying to deliver or the experience that we're trying to deliver.
Yes. What are there other things that are going to make us the, for speaking of corporate event, that's your space, you're in corporate yep. events. And the, what else other than saying we're hybrid here on out, we have to accommodate people in the virtual space as well as the in-person space. What else is going to make us successful today in the corporate environment space?
Yeah. So corporate I think it's that measurement aspect of things, right? So we can talk about how we deliver it. Yeah, we will be hybrid, I think, in a lot of cases. In some cases, we'll be strictly virtual, you know, and who knows the trajectory that the pandemic is going to go on. I mean, we may be looking at the fall where we say, I don't know, let's go take it all virtual again. But I think the measurement piece of it is what's going to make event people more successful as we go into it. Yes, you'll have to learn the technology. And yes, you'll have to be well-versed in saying, I want to reach this audience with this persona message and this brand halo that we're trying to establish. How is the best way to do that? You know, and in the toolkit, I've got reach out to my hotel contacts, get a ballroom space, hire an AV production company and turn up the staging and go, but you also have to have in that toolkit, you have to have the right ability to take that message and virtualize it and deliver that virtually to an audience, in my case, globally, right? I have to find that time slot that works all around the world for some of my bigger events. And that's a little tricky, but those are the things I think that will make us more successful as we go along. I think the old paradigm for event professionals is going to change to be kind of that overarching expert on how to deliver that content in a different way.
Yes. What are you doing? Is there anything you could share that you're doing now at Ryan that you're able to gather that data and kind of find out truly what that impact is? Yep. Anything in that area?
So absolutely. So that really is, what do we get out of the event, right? And how are we going to measure that ROI? How are we going to take that customer or that employee that was at that event or watched that event? How are we going to take them and track their journey getting closer to the firm, getting closer to the corporation? So we have ROI measurements, right? We track everything in our CRM system and we don't track everything. We try to track everything in our CRM system right. and follow that journey along for that customer or that prospect. And then you have the usual things that we've all done for the longest time, you know, but it used to be put a survey out on the desk and they filled it out when they left the room and threw it in the bin. Threw it in the bin, you know. One of the benefits of virtualization is we now have put the metrics that the digital marketing universe has built up into that process, right? We know about clicks. We know about engagement time. We know about post follow-up things. So we got to bring those two worlds together so we get that information in there. One of my goals here has been to make sure we have a journey for our customers as they go through our thought leadership events, right? So we have a number of thought leadership events that are us telling our story. We're big into tax. We're big into, you know, helping people with their taxes. And, you know, when did they touch an event? What happened after they touched the event? When was the next event we went to? So mapping that customer and prospect journey across our event flow is important to me. And that's some of the things we're working on today.
What do you miss, if anything, from the old days? Is it the cards, the tangible cards? I kind of miss those days myself. I think it slowed people down to give really thoughtful feedback versus getting them back on their phone. What about you?
Yeah, so I think the attention span of the audience, I think, is one of the things that I miss today a lot.
Yes, me too.
You know, so it used to be we'd, you know, put them in a room and we'd put up a nice show, give an opening module. We'd have worked hard to get the speaker to run the content through and line everything up. Today, I look at a meeting room and they're all looking at their phone and that's that second screen stuff. And then it's still important that, you know, we deliver that message in a good way, but I kind of miss that attention span of the audience where you could do 3 days of meeting and they're there wholly that whole 3 days. So not anymore.
Yes, absolutely. Present people who look up most, you can't control all the time, but more so than what I see as speaker trainers in the back of the room, a lot of heads down action, no matter how dynamic that speaker is. That's why That's why we train them to be a little more dynamic. So
that's right. And I think that, you know, we are in the business of delivering messages, right? And, you know, if we're not delivering that compelling message, you know, at one point we were in one big meeting and it was exactly that. Audience speaker was up there talking and a third of the audience was looking down at their phones. I'm like, why don't we just take that image from that screen that's there and deliver it to their phone and we can figure out a better way to do this. So I think that's one of the things I missed from the old days. That and, you know, the unlimited budget for incentive travel, but that's another discussion for another time.
Oh, yeah. I bet. Other things, we look back, if we look forward, what are some things we should be thinking about maybe 5 years from now in this, in the event space? Any ideas on that?
Yeah, so I do think a lot about it. First, I think we have to work really hard in training the event professionals of the future, right? And not only the event professionals, but the speakers in your world and a few other things that people need to upskill themselves so that they can contribute as a member of the marketing team. In most cases, events sit in marketing today, sometimes in communications, but a lot, most of the time in marketing departments. And, you know, they're going to have to learn how to compete for those investment dollars for marketing, for event marketing against a wide variety of new marketing tactics, be it social or digital or whatever. So we have to learn to upskill that. And I think that with that comes the responsibility for thinking about the audience in general and how do we deliver that key message to that audience in the best possible way. And I think, you know, green events are going to have to be, continue to be a forefront, right? We're going to have to continue greening the event space. Anybody that's ever been to a big trade show out in Las Vegas or Orlando and walks away at the end of the show and sees pounds and pounds and gallons of trash sitting in the loading dock, it's like, man, we need to do better.
Yes, for sure. Who is this? Who is the new audience? Who are we going to be speaking to, creating events for in the future? Who is that?
So I think it's evolutionary, right? Like most generations, it's changing. I have a younger son who is, you know, 25-ish now. And he's completely different than my oldest daughter. So I think as that evolves, we're going to see what I call the digitally enabled generation continue to grow as part of the that audience. And, you know, they're used to instant gratification on their cell phones and their mobile devices. And we need to find a way to deliver that messages. You know, when I sit down with an agenda development committee and we start putting out these agendas and someone says, I need 65 minutes to give my presentation, I'm like, you're crazy. And then, you know, someone tells me that, you know, I can't possibly do it in 20 minutes. You know, I just send them a link to a TED Talk and say, look what you can deliver in 20 minutes. Go for it. So I think we have to learn to model the changing generation, and they are digitally enabled. I mean, we all are today, right? I mean,
sure. Look at how we're speaking, right?
Yeah, I'm not young anymore, but I look at my phone all the time too much, right? Particularly with my wife over dinner, she says, "Are you listening to me or are you looking at the phone?" I'm like, "Sorry, I'm listening to you."
good answer. Yes, yeah, absolutely. So if we can focus on the speakers for my obsession for a few moments, is I love to ask my guests, if you have a speaker disaster story you may be willing to share with your history, I'm thinking maybe you could pull out one for me, please.
I have a couple. You know, there's obviously the logistical challenges of any speaker, right? They're busy. They book in late. They book out early. There have been a number of times where speakers have not shown up ahead of time. There have been a couple of times where speakers have shown up and gotten confused which audience they're speaking to, including the wrong company name, which is of interest. You're contracting it out. They should at least spend a little effort in figuring out who they're going to talk to instead of their stump speech, if you want to call it that.
Yep,
Those are the paid speakers stories. The internal speakers, you know, they're not all as good as they think they are. And they don't all take coaching as well as they should. So, you know, there've been a few times where they've gotten lost and I can't read that teleprompter. It's too small. Well, that's why you were supposed to come to rehearsal, you know,
check, please. Exactly.
So, you know, on balance, the professional speakers I've worked with have all really been good to work with. That's a good industry. They can learn more and they can do better, but we work hard when we do our speaker selection, right? We talk to other clients that they've worked with. And of course we look at their tape and we read their synopsis and do all that stuff. But luckily I have a lot of contacts out in the industry and I pick up the phone and say, have you ever used her, him, whatever? And they'll say, yeah, great. or well, not so good. So
right. Or we learn. Thumbs down. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's astonishing in my world that how many problems could have been solved by attending even just one rehearsal or one short coaching to, for example, get the font size on your teleprompter.
Yeah.
Correct, your eyes. Absolutely.
And get the company name right. You know, it's up there blazoned on the stage. Maybe you could look around before you walk out and say, hey, welcome to the Bozo Show or whatever.
Right. So. And they call it Brian instead of Ryan. I mean, that's just embarrassing. Absolutely.
It is. But, you know, the power carry of a great speech is one of the things I really like about the industry. You can move an industry just by telling a story. And storytelling is an important thing when you're delivering it to an audience. So, you know, that feeling as an event planner, you walk out of the room and go, that was really a great, great speaker. And that's a great moment. Whether that's an internal CEO, CFO, CMO, or a paid speaker, that's a great moment in the event industry. Because that's what really counts to me. The food, the beverage, yeah, it's got to be right. But to me, it's the messaging you deliver on the stage that makes or breaks an event.
Oh, you are singing my song. Yes, absolutely. People tell a good story. The audience remembers that feeling, and that's going to stay much longer than maybe my roast beef sandwich wasn't the best.
Yeah. Like so that. they accuse the event staff at previous places has always accused me of buying the worst possible meal. It's not that, it's the cheapest one I can find on the menu because nobody remembers the food, but everybody remembers the story.
That is so true. No one remembers the food. Everyone remembers the story. Absolutely. How do you, if you are looking to prep speakers, how do you do it? What do you give them or arm them with?
Yep. So we prepare a speaker brief, right? And we tell our story and we tell the key points and then the audience demographics, all of that sort of the speaker equivalent of the know before you go kind of email that we normally send out before an event.
Wonderful.
I have in previous iterations for the bigger events actually put speech coaches in the room for rehearsal. And I've actually asked them to work through primarily for the client speakers, sometimes with a paid speaker, but you know, we put that speech coach in the room and he or she is responsible for the care and feeding of those speakers, right? And they're the ones who are supposed to say, you connected with me at this point, you could have done better with this one, here's how I would have told that story. So to me, that's an expense, but well worth it. You know, you got all this other stuff, the staging, you got the lights, the stage, the food, the beverage, the travel. I mean, it's a well thought through investment, at least from my perspective, on how to make sure your story gets out.
I could not agree more with what you just said. So thank you. That was a perfect little internal advertisement for Ovation Coaching Services. So thank you very much.
There you go.
Absolutely. Other than telling a good story and rehearsing, anything else you wish speakers did more of?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they'll tell a story from their viewpoint. If they can twist that story more towards the viewpoint of the audience, I think that is a value to the audience just a little bit. And I think there's so many people out telling specific pieces of the story that if they can align better with what they're saying with some action the audience can take, right? I mean, it's interesting that you did that. You climbed a mountain, you sailed across the ocean, you worked in the government, whatever. But what's the action steps that those speakers are asking the audience to take? Because in the end, we're about motivating people and we're about motivating that audience, right? I mean, a little bit of entertainment, but a little more motivation, I think would be my advice to speakers. Ooh, deliver a message that they can act on.
Absolutely. I agree. So how'd you get here? How'd you find your way to events? Tell me a little bit, take me back to young Joe, maybe, however far.
I stumbled into it. It never was my dream. You know, I was right out of college. I was working for a telecommunications company. I was an account executive and I had some success at it. I won an incentive trip to Cabo, which, you know, was Cabo. So, you know, was on the boat.
That's your yearning for returning to good incentive trips. I now understand. Okay, I got it. Yes. Yeah,
so I watched the event team. I'm like, oh, it was like an interesting job. Then I got promoted based on my sales success to the corporate headquarters in New Jersey. And marketing department was being built. My then director, who's still a good friend of mine 30 plus years later, said, I need somebody to run my events. I'm like, I don't know anything about events. What are you talking about? So, well, you sold to hotels because that was the market I sold into. So you speak their language. You're now in charge of the event program here. Okay. So figured that out, ran a couple of incentive trips in Hawaii, ran a couple of corporate launches and things for that. And ended up on the committee that was working on what is now the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. At the time, it was the Bing Crosby family clam bake out there in Monterey, and rebranded it and brought it on board and hung out there because I met a lot of the executives that moved to another telecommunications company. They drugged me along and I got put in charge of, I was the director of public affairs for the company. So I had the event business and I had the PR and communications aspects as well, and just kind of rode that curve from senior manager to senior vice president. So that was what I did. And that was 2,800 events ago, Carrie. So it's been a run. I counted them up one time.
Did you really? Wow.
2,830 something. There's more now, but when I looked last, it was that.
That favorite? Do you have a favorite one? Like the one that takes you back, and you're so wistful of like, this was it. Out of the 2,800 events, this was the one.
Yeah, you know, I think to me the incentive trips are great, right? Because you got a big audience that has done well and you're thanking them. They should feel good about that. So those are relatively fun, relatively easy. Plus, we take them to nice places. But I think the ones that made a big difference to me are like the product launches or the brand launches or those big product launch kind of get-togethers where we're talking about, you know, moving a business forward. And I remember one we did in St. Louis that was 12,000 people bringing two companies together and launching that new go-to-market. That was kind of cool. And, you know, we always at the end of those, the person I worked for always said, make people feel like they really want to work here, right? That was my overarching goal of that. So at the end of that, we always launched this very high-end bespoke incentive that the top salespeople could go on if they did what we just told them to do. So that was kind of fun. I mean, we flew airplanes in ballrooms. We ran boats down hallways. We had tanks come in one time. So we had a lot of fun with those special launches. That was an interesting time.
Was it a sad day when you had to drop the Bing Crosby name from the golf events?
They didn't care. They paid a lot of money for it. They got paid a lot of money for it.
Are you, I know you're a big rock fan from your DJ days. So are you Bing Crosby? Are you an old classics American songbook fan?
You know, Carrie, I like all kinds of music, right? So we tend to err a little more as we get older, a little more towards the Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra stage of life. That's just a little mellower. But I grew up working at a radio station here in Michigan when I was in college, and it was a rock and roller. So I hearken back to some of my rock and roll days.
Ooh, favorite concert you've ever been to?
You know, I don't really go to concerts. I produce some. Concert I've ever produced, right? So yes. we produced a show, and they're more intimate. They weren't the big shows. A lot of my coworkers and peer group have produced over time. But we had a thing down in New Orleans at the House of Blues. We had Glenn Frey and Joe Walsh. And that's one of the guitars back here is signed by those guys. And it was a great show. 300-400 people in the room, kind of an acoustic get together, and that was a great show. So that was fun. We didn't get the whole Eagles. We got, you know, Walsh and Fry, but we got
pretty good.
We got to do that, and then we ran a couple of big customer events down at the golf tournament that we would bring in a lot of talent for, main talent for, which was always fun.
Yes, you do. Joe has, if you're listening, Joe has an impressive collection of guitars behind him, as well as sports paraphernalia that all seem to be signed or very prominent something specific.
Lots of sports marketing in my past too, and a lot at Ryan. Ryan's got a great sports marketing program that we use for customer entertainment, but I've been to 22 Super Bowls. So, actually never paid to attend a Super Bowl. I've worked out, that's all working. So it was kind of a fun thing. Ryan's got a big commitment to sports marketing. In fact, right after I get done here, I have a conference call with the New York Yankees. So not a tough life.
That doesn't sound so bad. Wow. No. Very impressive.
Work. It's work though, right?
But it's fun work.
It's fun work. Yeah. The event industry has been phenomenally rewarding to me. right? And I think the places we've gone, the things we've done, the places we've seen, the people we've met, it's been a great run. I'm proud of the work we've done. I'm proud of the industry. We got more to do, but I think we've really done a great job historically with making magic in the event space.
Absolutely. Well said. Thank you for that. Are you ready, Joe McEwen, to move on to our Lightning Express round?
I'd be delighted to.
All right, wonderful. I'm going to put 45 seconds on the clock, and you have 7 questions ahead of you. Ready?
I am ready. Go.
Excellent. Joe, what is your favorite moment in the event process?
Defining the results.
Yes. Who do you consider your mentor?
A guy I worked for way back when named Bill.
Ooh, yes. Thank you, Bill. What is your favorite long cut rock song?
Inagata DeVita.
Yes. Excellent. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
Exercise and take time for myself. Because if I don't take time for myself and I want my team to take time for themselves, this business will eat you alive.
True that. If you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing? Talking to the Yankees?
I'd probably be talking to one of the sports marketing entities that we have at Ryan, the Yankees, the Cowboys, the Rams, the Dolphins, whatever.
That's an impressive list. Excellent. What is your favorite thing about Michigan?
Summer.
Oh, yes. Well, yes, me too. And final question, what is the best way to take care of an event professional?
Support, guide, and be emotionally connected to them so you understand what they're going through.
Yes, absolutely. Well said, and you nailed it. Thank you so much. Joe, where can people find you if they wanted to connect with you? Where's the best place to stalk you, find you?
Yeah, well, they stalk me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty much an open networker on LinkedIn.
Yes.
That's probably the best place. They're also more than willing to connect with me at my Ryan email or my Gmail address. So either of those are fine.
All right. We will put both of those in the show notes. Thank you so much. And I appreciate your time this morning. This has been insightful and fun and inspiring. I feel ready to go and grab today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, you for your time. I've enjoyed the conversation. You know, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and I wish you a great day.
Thank you. You are so welcome. Thank you to our audience. Remember that if you like events, if you love events like Joe and I do, or even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast. Give us a 5-star rating. Joe deserves it. Joe, 2,800 plus events. Joe deserves it. And remember, my friends, whatever you speak about, remember to be speaking of events. Have a great day.
Speaking of events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovation.